So we will try to finish up today. Sort of. We're sort of going to finish up today. I want to begin talking about global functorality. Oops, let me spell it right. It's okay. Global field. Just the usual guys. A at the del. I'm having trouble spelling today. Psi, additive character. And let me take G to be connected, reductive split over K. Last time I talked about local functoriality, and functoriality is always mediated by an L homomorphism, so let me let R be a complex analytic map of the L group of G, and now this is just the connected component. Since I'm split, I'm not going to worry about the Galois or the Vey part, into GLNC, which is the L group of GLN. So I'm really only going to talk about functorialities to GLN. Then the global principle of functoriality would say something like, would be something like, given an automorphic representation small pi of the idyllic points of A, there should be associated a natural lift or transfer pi, let's see, lift or transfer to an automorphic representation capital pi of GLNA. And this is sort of mediated by R. So it's attached, let me just say it this way, mediated by R. So it's attached to this L homomorphism somehow. Now, even though we don't have, when we talked about local functoriality, oh yeah, we're okay. When we talked about local functoriality last week, we explained local functoriality in terms of the local Langlands correspondence or local Langlands conjecture parameterization, and we do not have a global parameterization at this point, and that's because of the lack of a L group, global Langlands group. This is what Arthur talked about at the workshop. But instead, we can replace that with a local global principle. So we can give a precise formulation. In terms of a local global principle. And by that I mean the following. We begin with, say, pi, we'll make it cuspidal, so irreducible cuspidal. And cuspidals are always irreducible the way I've defined them, so a cuspidal representation of my group G. Okay, then outside, so there's a finite set of finite places, S, such that if I'm not in this finite set of places, then I understand the local Langlands conjecture for G. The local Langlands conjecture for, well, not for G, but basically for pi v, right? So it's either the place is Archimedean and there we understand everything, or the place is finite and there we understand how to parameterize the unramified representations. and that takes care of almost everything. We're missing the finite number of places where the representation may be ramified. Okay? So we understand it for pi v, and then for these places, we just repeat our old diagram. Pi v, I have a parameter that looks like a map of the local Vedalin group into the L group. I compose this with my L homomorphism to an appropriate GL. That gives me a parameter on GL, and for GL, we understand the local Langlands correspondence completely, and it's a bijection, so this uniquely determines a representation pi v, the local functorial lift. Okay. So we understand, and in other words, what this says is that we really understand what this thing should look like at almost all places. And so we make the following definition. It's an add-L class character. It's an additive character right now. That's just, in a minute I'm going to talk about L's and epsilons, and I'm going to have an additive character. So it's just part of the, it's one of those things that if I don't say it in the beginning, it'll just pop up in the middle somewhere. No, it's just a fixed additive character that will show up at some point. So no, for right now, it's not playing any role whatsoever. No. So my definition of functoriality is going to be the following. So given an automorphic representation, and I guess I've talked about cuspidal there, but there's no reason. This doesn't have to be cuspidal. So let me just say automorphic here. An automorphic representation. I mean, for the formulation, it doesn't matter. If I go to prove anything, I'll need it to be cuspidal. Given an automorphic representation pi of G of A, we will call an automorphic representation capital pi, a functorial, that's a representation of GLN. We'll call it a functorial lift or transfer of small pi according or associated to this L homomorphism if there exists a finite set of places such that for all V not in S, the local component of pi is the local functorial lift of small pi. So I'm going to call this a functorial lift. Now, at some stage, we were calling this a weak lift because it didn't determine the thing at every place. But if you look at the recent formulations, and maybe even the not-so-recent formulations of functoriality, say that Arthur gave in his lecture here or in Langland's recent works, this is what they call functoriality. It's just controlling things almost everywhere. So I got the weak terminology. I'm partially responsible for the terminology of weak lift, but I got that from Arthur and Clozel's book on base change. And when I ask Arthur about it, he says, oh, that must have been Clozel. basically it's a functorial lift where I can say more things about the image. The thing is, I'm not going to say anything about a strong lift. I mean, this is going to be a functorial lift, and if I can say more past this is good. Now, what we're going to see, I'll talk about this next week, actually, is that one thing that one can do is sort of use this machinery with some others to then fill in the local Langlands correspondence at some of the bad places, and then you might want to say something else here, but the thing is it uses...
If you were to conclude things like arcing conjecture, things like that,
Well, yeah, for certain purposes. I mean, you want to know as much as possible. But right now, this is, like I said, if you look in what Arthur did or in the recent papers of Langlands, this is what they call functorality, reality, is this. Okay. Note that. Yeah, I mean, you expect that, this is going to control everything, particularly for GLN. If it's particularly if the image is cuspidal, right? If pi is cuspidal, that determines pi everywhere. If it's not cuspidal, if it's isobaric, that determines it everywhere. So this is really supposed, particularly for GLN, this is supposed to give you everything. No, I mean, I'm not saying that you are. But I'm saying this is what I'm going to call a functorial lift, is if I can control it at almost all places. We do get from this at least an equality of partial L functions, along with epsilon factors, and even twistings by cuspidal representations of GL. Yeah, I believe so. Okay. Now, so let me talk about functoriality and the converse theorem. Because in some sense, the development of the converse theorem over the past few years has really been to attack this problem. Okay? To attack the problem of functoriality. And so the way that one uses it to attack it, just in general, is the following. So we begin with, we begin with my pi, and let me make it now a cuspidal representation of GA. Then the three steps for using the converse theorem to establish functoriality to my GLN are the following. Well, the first one is to produce a candidate lift. I'm having trouble with spelling today for some reason. Candidate. Okay. Now, if one knows the local Langlands conjecture for all places, for all pi v, then one simply takes the local Langlands, local functorial lift, which I'll call pi v, capital pi v, to GLN kv, and then form capital pi, which is the restricted tensor product of these guys. So this is an irreducible, admissible representation of GLN of A. Okay, so it's exactly the sort of thing you can apply the converse theorem to. And then from the formalism, one expects that LS pi is equal to LS capital pi, same thing for epsilon, okay? Because it's the product of the local guys with the twisted versions. Okay? So this should come from the formalism. Actually, the way I am right now, I still have, let me, on this side, these are the L and epsilon factors attached to that L homomorphism over there on the left-hand side. On the right-hand side are just the standard ones for GL. Okay? So this one expects these equalities. Now, of course, the problem here that I'll address in a minute is we don't know the local Langlands conjecture at all places necessarily. But hopefully this is what you want to do. You want to do something locally to produce the candidate lift that is an irreducible admissible representation. Okay, so that's the first step. The second step, yes, you know it at almost all places. Yeah, but you're missing a finite number and you have to do something there. The second step is to control the analytic properties. You want to control the analytic properties of the twisted L functions and the twisted epsilon factors. And you want to do this for sufficiently many twists by pi prime, and these are going to be cuspidal representations of GL, well, some smaller GL, GLDA, and say one between D and n minus 1 or n minus 2, depending on which version of the converse theorem you want to use. So you want to control these so you can apply the converse theorem to your candidate lift, but the thing is, from those equalities, what these should be is LS pi times pi prime, and this is R tensored. I use iota for the standard. That's the just the yeah, it's sort of the, I take GLDC and I view it both as the L group of, I take a representation, a vague representation into it, but it is the L group itself. So as far as R is concerned, it's just the identity map. So that's why I use iota. And the same thing for epsilon. So if I need to know these are nice, it suffices to know that these are nice. But this is exactly what Henry's been talking about all term. Okay? So this is what, so Henry, been discussing. ANALY, the analytic properties of the LS pi times pi prime, or tensor iota all term. Now there is another problem here in general. And the problem is, remember, to apply the converse theorem, I need to know these are nice. So I need to know functional equation, boundedness, and vertical strips, and that they're entire. Okay? And the problem here is that even if small pi is cuspidal, the predicted lift, capital pi, need not be. So we would expect C sum of these twisted L functions to have poles. If we don't place some restriction on pi prime. Okay? I mean, there's no reason why something that's cuspidal on a classical group shouldn't lift to something that's non-cuspidal on GL. Okay? And this is actually related to the phenomenon of endoscopy, among other things. Okay. So there may be some poles if we just try to twist by everything. Okay. But Henry's already told us how to get around this, so we know how to get it. But there is a problem here, a global problem that we expect these to actually have poles sometimes if we twist by as much as I've said here. Okay, but finally, the third step is that if we can get that the L S pi times pi prime R tensor iota, which is L S capital pi twisted by pi prime, are nice for a sufficient twisting set. Then we apply the converse theorem and claim that capital pi is quasi-automorphic, and then the associated thing to it, the associated automorphic thing, will then be a functorial lift. So if these are nice for a sufficient twisting set, we apply the appropriate converse theorem, concluding that capital pi is quasi-automorphic, which implies that there exists a pi prime which agrees with it almost everywhere, and that pi prime is going to be our functorial lift. So that's basically the idea. Once you've got the converse theorem at hand, it's pretty clear what you want to do to use it to attack functoriality, and I've just sort of laid these steps out. Okay. All right. Let me now turn. Are there any questions about just this bit? Because this is the roadmap that we're now going to follow. So what I would like to do now is turn to functoriality for the classical groups. And explain in these examples how one deals with these two problems and establishes functorial lift from the split classical groups to GL. So now I'm going to emphasize this. K is a number field. And it turns out for these applications, for the applications of this program, this is crucial. Okay, right now. And actually, let me explain that right now, because I'm afraid if I forget later on, So actually, the converse theorem, even though we've always dealt with the number field, I've tried to tell you the converse theorem could care less whether you're dealing with a number field or a global function field. But just as a historical fact, more than anything else, if I'm going to control the analytic properties of these L functions using the Langlands-Shahidi method, so controlling Fourier coefficients of Eisenstein series, It's just a historical fact that that theory has developed over number fields, characteristic zero, because in the beginning, when Shahidi first started, the theory of Eisenstein series over function fields was not sufficiently well developed. Now, I have no doubts that everything that has been done over number fields can be done over function fields, but as far as I know, it hasn't been. So right now, I do have to restrict to the number field case just because of the state of the theory of Eisenstein series. Okay, but if you look at things like McGlynn-Walsh-Breger, yeah. They do the global field case. So there is a lot known about Eisenstein series over function fields, but I think the relationship between L functions and these things have not been worked out. So that's something. So anyway, so now K is a number field. They may be. A better way? Let's. Anyway, but however you do it is fine. I'm just explaining why this has to be a number field right now. Okay, so I'm going to take Gn to be a split classical group of rank n, and really I have some very specific ones in mind. So it's either going to be, let me see where I am in my notes here. Yep. Okay, so it's either going to be, it's going to be SO2n plus 1 or SO2n, and I'm even going to specify the form with respect to the form. Represented by phi m, which is just the matrix that has ones up the skew diagonal. So for m equals 2n plus 1, or 2n. And the reason I take this is because then it turns out that you can take as a Borel subgroup the group of upper triangular matrices in these groups. So this gives you the Borel subgroup as upper triangular instead of some strange form. And that is split. Or I'm going to take Gn to be the symplectic group SP2n. And this is with respect to the form J2n, which looks like phi n minus phi n. So it's minus ones up the skew diagonal for a while, and then one. And again, for the same reason, that makes the unipotent, that makes the upper triangular matrices a Borel subgroup. Okay. Now, in each case, there is a natural embedding of the L group into an appropriate GLN. Okay, so here they are. So let me put a little table up here. So Gn is either SO2n plus 1, SO2n, or SP2n. Now Henry's told us what the dual groups of these things are, at least the connected components. So for this, it's SP2nC. For SO2n, that's self-dual, so it's SO2nC. And for SP, it's SO2n plus 1C. So these guys are sort of dual of one another. And these all embed into some GLNC, and it's just natural. So this one goes into GL2nC. So this is my map R. This one goes into GL2nC. And this one embeds naturally into GL2n plus 1C. And so I should expect liftings to the following GLNs. For the odd orthogonal group, it should lift to GL2n. For the even orthogonal group, it should also lift to GL2n. And the symplectic group should lift to GL2n plus 1. And so I'm going to, since this R is the standard embedding of the L group into GLMC, I'm going to drop it from the notation. So since these L functions here on this side are going to be sort of the standard L functions corresponding to this embedding, I'm going to drop this from my notation from now on, okay, just to make things easier, because I know I'm going to forget it and drop it anyway, so I might as well do it up front. Then the theorem here, and this is due to Henry and I and P.S. and Shahidi, is the following. If pi is a globally generic cuspidal representation of one of these classical groups, then pi has a functorial lift capital pi, which is an automorphic representation of the appropriate GLN. Okay, and this is associated to the standard, since the functorialities are always associated to some map of dual groups, this one is associated to the standard embedding. Given that table. Okay. All right. And now, of course, I'm running one blackboard ahead of myself. So I'm going to follow this outline that I just gave you, the steps to take. And so the first step, as we can see, that sits right under this line here, is to construct a candidate. Yeah, that's what that says, to construct a candidate lift. And when we construct these candidate lists, it's very important that we have an equality of L and epsilon, twisted L and epsilon, because we're going to control the L function of this lift by the L function of the representation of the classical group. So, okay, construction of a candidate so let me take, I was going to do this before, but I can do it now. Let S be the finite set of finite places such that for all V not in S, but V still finite, pi V is unramified. And it doesn't have to be exactly that set. It can be a bigger set with this property. It doesn't matter. So then the places that, so, actually I've got my numbering screwed up. Let me make this a 1. So then A, for places not in S, then either the places Archimedean, and we know the local Langlands conjecture, or pi v is unramified, and we know the local Langlands conjecture. So at these places, we have a well-defined local functorial lift capital pi v as an admissible irreducible representation of GLN. Okay? By the diagram that I've, that little triangle diagram that I've already put up. So we have that. And as suggested by the formalism, we can prove that in this case, and it's a little bit, I think I may have misspoke earlier, I think it's a little bit more than the formalism, because at these finite places where we really only know the parametrization through the Satake parameters, twisting is, you have to control the twisting, and that requires a little bit more. So, but as predicted by the formalism, one can show the following proposition. So for capital Pi V, the local functorial lift of little Pi V, then for any irreducible, admissible, generic representation Pi prime V of any GLD KV, and I only need this for one D between 1 and N minus 1, we have both the L functions, the twisted L functions, and the twisted epsilon factors. Agree. For the Archimedean places, it is just exact, it is the formalism because there's no problems. I believe at the finite places, we have to realize these generic things as, oh, no, I think we use that pi v is unramified. I mean that pi is unramified and use multiplicativity of gamma. So there is a little proof involved here. You do have to do some work. But the, they agree, and that's not the hard part. But the problem, of course, well, now I'm going to erase my second problem when I deal with my first problem. The problem is, what do you do at the places in S where you do not know, you do not have a local functorial lift. You don't know what you're supposed to put on the other side. So let's solve that problem. So for the places in S, we... let's see, did I have a good... We replace the knowledge of the local Langlands conjecture by the following two local results. Okay. Now the first one I believe Henry talked about, the first one is the multiplicativity of the local gamma factor. Okay. And what it says is that if I take, well, there are lots of statements to it, but let me just give you one. One says that if I take something like this representation I want to twist by, and that's an induced representation, then the gamma factor factors accordingly. So let me give that version of it. So if pi v is an irreducible, admissible, generic representation of my classical group, and pi prime is an irreducible, admissible, generic representation of some GLD of the form let's say pi v prime is an induced representation from two other things, pi 1v and pi 2v. Okay, so these are, where pi iv is again a generic representation of some smaller GLs, then you think of this as being multiplication of these two representations, and then the fact that gamma is multiplicative says gamma of s pi twisted by, sorry, pi v twisted by pi v prime is gamma of s pi v twisted by pi 1 v prime, gamma of s pi v twisted by pi 2 v prime. Okay, so you get this statement. That's the multiplicativity of gamma. Henry talked about this in the context of controlling the L functions via Eisenstein series, and this is how we're going to control these L functions, and that's fine. So I should note that there is a version where pi v is induced. I'm only going to use that implicitly, not explicitly, so I'm not going to state it. And there's also is a divisibility of L functions, which I believe it says the L function of the right-hand side, I take its inverse, so that's a polynomial in Q to the minus S divides the L function, the product of the L function of the right-hand side. Okay. So this is multiplicity of gamma, and Henry did explain this in his lectures, because I looked to see if it was there. It's there. Yes. Yes, it is there. In fact, I think you gave a statement and sort of a reason, and then you gave an example which was very much like this. You did a product of two things where one of them was induced. So. Now, the second statement is one. Oh, I should point out that one of the things way back in the deep, dark past is I told you that this theorem was also true for GLN. So this is also true for if I replace GN by GLN. The second fact is the stability of gamma. Okay, and now what this says is the following. Now I take if pi 1v and pi 2v are two irreducible, admissible generic representations of my classical group, okay, then for every sufficiently highly ramified character of the multiplicative group, so of GL1 if you like, so A to V, we have that if I look at the twisted gamma factors just by this character, that as long as A is sufficiently highly ramified, and that degree of ramification will depend on the two, pi 1 and pi 2, but I don't care, then those gamma factors stabilize. They become equal. So in other words, if I'm twisting by a highly ramified character, I really can't tell two representations apart in terms of their gamma factors. And also, this is separate. This is not stability of gamma, but we also know that on the level of L functions that when you twist by a sufficiently highly ramified character, the L functions become one. Okay. So the epsilon factors stabilize. Okay. And this result we're just going to take as a black box. Mahdi mentioned this on Thursday, last Thursday. The proof of this is to write the gamma factor as the Mellin transform of a certain Bessel function attached to the representation, analyze the asymptotics of the Bessel function, and prove that if you take the difference of two gamma factors then, and you twist by something highly ramified, you can eventually make that zero. But the theory of Bessel functions would take us much too far out of what we've been doing. So this I'm going to take as a black box, just as I did for GLN. I gave you the similar statement for GLN and took it as a black box also. So this is going to be the one really black box. I don't know. So is this in terms of the L function itself or the epsilon factor? Or the root, I mean the... Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, but here I'm multiplying, yeah, so here I'd be multiplying by 8 FP in some sense. Right. See, but now I'm just a multiplicative character. Yeah. Okay, good. Because it's... Yeah. Yeah, it's like a local Dirichlet character. Yeah. Now, so 2 points now. One is, as reported back in lecture 4, these results are true for GLN. Okay, so that's the first. And then if you remember back from what we did in GLN, I know that's asking a lot, because I wouldn't remember except I knew I needed to. One thing you can do, if you have that this is stable, and you want to say, okay, do I know what the value is, then the way that you would actually compute the stable value is to take one of the representations and replace it with a full induced from characters and use multiplicativity in this other variable to reduce it to a product of one-dimensional epsilon factors or gamma factors. Okay? So you can compute, let me say it this way, by taking pi 2v to be a full induced from characters, you can compute the stable form. And that's very important. And it's very, I mean, it's elementary. You just replace it by a full induced and use multiplicativity. And you get it in terms of one-dimensional gamma factors. But we also computed, I mean, in this we did compute the GLN form. So we computed the GLN stable form. Way back when. So what you do is you say, okay, well, I now can compare these. And if you compare them, and it's just simply a matter of carrying this out, so if you compare these, you get the following proposition. That small pi v be an irreducible, admissible generic representation of GLN, of the classical group GN, and let capital pi v be an irreducible, admissible, say generic, representation of GL capital N of KV with trivial central character. Remember, the GL stable form depended on the central character. Then, by comparing stable forms, for every sufficiently highly ramified character, we have, and now I'm going to write down gamma s pi v times a to v psi v. This is a gamma factor for the classical group that is equal to gamma of s capital V twisted by a to v. That's a gamma factor for GLN. So these are equal. And notice, in both cases, the epsilon factors, I mean, the L function stabilizes at 1, so this gives equality of epsilon factors also. Okay? So since L stabilizes to 1, the stable epsilon factors agree. Okay. And that, with this, we've essentially solved our problem. Because now what we do is the following. So we can now state the following proposition. If pi v is an irreducible, admissible, generic representation of GN KV, and capital pi v is the same thing for GLN with trivial central character, and pi prime v is a generic representation of GLD, so this is my twisting representation, of the form, so I need it to be pi v naught, where did I put my naught? I need it to be an unramified representation twisted by eta. Put it down. But I think I usually put unramified stuff up. That doesn't matter. With pi naught unramified and eta as above, then Ls pi v times pi v prime is equal to Ls capital pi v twisted by pi v prime, and epsilon s pi v twisted by pi v prime with the additive character is epsilon s capital pi v twisted by pi v prime with my character. Okay. And the proof, well, let me just give you the proof on the level of gamma factors. So let me, I'll do it here. Let me leave my multiplicativity up there. So the proof, so on the level of gamma, is the following. Well, what does it mean to be unramified? If I'm unramified and generic, I'm a full induced from unramified characters. So we can write pi naught v prime as a full induced, say, absolute S1 down to absolute SD. So this was on GLD, is that where I had it? Yes. So I can write that that way, so that pi prime, that's this twisted by eta, is induced from absolute S1 eta down to absolute SD eta. So that group of characters. So what is gamma of S pi V twisted by pi V prime? Well, the first thing I do is I use multiplicativity in the GL variable, because this, I mean, I can use it repeatedly here. And what you get is, when you use multiplicativity, this is the product, I equals 1 to D, gamma S plus SI, pi V twisted by A to V, psi V. So that's multiplicativity. Okay? That's just that fact there. And the fact that if you have these absolute values, they just add to S. But over here, I know that as long as I'm just twisting by this eta, I can replace my representation on the classical group with my GL representation. So by stability, by comparing these stable forms, this is the product I equals 1 to D, gamma S plus SI, capital pi V times A to V, psi V. So this is now a statement on GL. And then I use multiplicativity on GL to put this back together. Oops, I'm arguing on the level of gammas. All right. And using the divisibility and the fact that the L factor is stable at 1, this does turn into an equality of L and epsilon. Yeah, I don't need generic. That's true. That's true. That's not needed. So here we'll put a gap here. So this is a place where we really do... Well, actually, no, it doesn't matter. I can leave it in. Yeah, this is my candidate. Yeah. Yeah. So since I've only talked about generic, I can leave it in. I can take it out because the GL stuff really doesn't depend on it being generic. But at this point, I can... Yeah, because at one point I was saying that if I wanted to take a representation with trivial central character, I can just take the trivial representation and plug it in. And I can do that. But I might as well take something generic. It's a little bit more civilized. Anyway, that's basically the proof. On the level of gamma, but if I put this, so this tells me at the bad places, at the places in S, okay, as long as I stick with twisting by representations that look like unramified twisted by this character, I get equality of L and epsilon. At the places that were not in S, I got equality of L and epsilon for any pi prime. So if I put these two things together, then we obtain the following result. We obtain the following proposition. Well, so let me, before I do that, so here's my candidate list is going to be pi, which is the restricted tensor product of pi v, where capital pi v is the local functorial lift of small pi v if v is not in S, and it's just an irreducible admissible generic representation with trivial central character. If E is an S. And then we have the following proposition. There exists an Edel class character Ada mapping such that LS pi times pi prime, well, such that, let's do it this way, such that for all pi prime in twisting set rank up to n minus 1, I want them to be unramified at S, but twisted by this character. Okay? And my only condition on this character is that the places in S, it's sufficiently ramified that I get those equalities. And I just pick one and I fix it. Okay? And then for all pi prime here, I've got my local equality of L and epsilon at all places. So we get that L S pi times pi prime is L S capital pi times pi prime, and epsilon S pi times pi prime is equal to epsilon S capital pi twisted by pi prime. Okay? And that's a sufficient twisting set to apply the converse theorem. That's one of my twisting sets that I'm allowed to use. Okay? Okay. And my only, like I said, the only conditions on the Edel class character is that it has to be sufficiently ramified at the finite number of places in S for this to be true. Okay. So, I've solved my first problem, the lack of local Langlands. And it's done through these two results, multiplicativity and stability. And that's why those are always important. There may be other reasons why they're always important also, but this is the one, I mean, this is if you like, the application of stability as far as I know. I mean, I will admit, when Ilya and I first proved stability for SO2N plus 1, we couldn't even convince people that we should be allowed to talk about it. So, well, what can you do? What can you do? All right. So now, second step. A and A O Y, analytic properties. Of L functions. Well, this is what Henry's been talking about all semester. These, the classical groups twisted by GL are on the list. You take a classical group twisted by GL, it's a Levy inside a larger classical group of the same type. So all of these L functions that we're talking about occur as first L functions from Henry's list. There may be other ones there. You can take care of them. Doesn't matter. You get the following. Let me just give you the statement. So, and this is all from Henry's lectures. So let me let pi be a globally generic cuspidal representation of GN, the classical group. Let S be any finite set. Finite places, does need to be non-empty, and let Ada be any Edel class character such that for one place V naught in S, so as far as I care for this statement, S could only have one place in it. Okay? It does need to have one place in it, though. Such that for one place V naught in S, both eta V naught and the square of eta at that place are ramified. Then LS pi times pi prime is nice for all pi prime in twisting set up to rank n minus 1 twisted by this character. Right? Nice means entire, bounded in vertical strips, functional equation. Okay? And as Henry has explained, the functional equation holds in great generality. The boundedness in vertical strips holds in great generality. And to get the entirety to rule out poles, one way to do that is to make sure that the representations that occur are not self-dual. And one way to do that is to twist by such a character. Because having the square of this character be ramified at one place, be non-trivial, will keep the inducing representation in that theory from being self-dual, and so you don't get any poles. So this twisting by eta is only needed to make sure you have no poles, and that was our one problem at the global control of the L functions, was that the predicted lift to GL might not be cuspidal. So I might expect if I twist by all cuspidal representations on smaller GLs, one of them will detect that what I'm trying to lift is not cuspidal and will have a pole. And what this does, this twisting by eta here, prevents that from happening. Okay. So there it is. And I present it as a proposition only because the theorem is the functoriality here. So it involves many theorems from Henry's lectures, but here it's a proposition. Okay? Not for any good reason, just and then we're essentially done. I'm going to give you back all the time I took for you all semester today. Well, maybe. I'm not done yet. Okay. So finally, we apply the converse theorem. So we begin with pi. Are globally generic cusp form. We form our candidate lift. As above. Okay. We choose a set of places S and an Edel class character eta such that L S pi times pi prime is equal to L S capital pi times, well, sorry, let me do it this way, such that for all pi prime in the twisting set, unramified at S, up to rank n minus 1, everything tensored by eta, we have two things. First is that the L functions agree, the L and epsilon. Oops. And this is choosing S and eta to solve my local problem of not knowing local Langlands. Okay, so that's one condition on S and eta. But if I was say unramified everywhere, I could have had S empty at this point and no eta. But I also need, so we have this and LS pi times pi prime is nice. And that's a different set of conditions. Okay? Now, if at this stage I already had to have an S and an eta, I can just make sure that at one of these places eta squared is ramified also. And it's going to be highly ramified. I just make sure it's not highly ramified but quadratic. Okay, so I don't necessarily have to introduce any more places here. But if for some reason I didn't have to introduce anything here to solve my local problem, I still have to have at least one place here to solve the global problem of poles. Okay. So this, as I said, this variant of the, this was my useful variant of the converse theorem to allow unramified twisted by eta. And like I said, it's not a hard thing to put that eta in there, but psychologically it's what gives you the freedom to realize that you can solve things like these local and global problems by twisting by a character. And this is a common, I think this is a fairly common technique to use twisting by highly ramified characters to do things for you. Okay? And so then we apply what I think I called the useful variant. Of the converse theorem to conclude that our candidate lift is quasi automorphic, i.e., there exists an automorphic representation, capital Pi prime. And remember, the condition was such that Pi prime V was isomorphic to Pi V for V not in S. Okay? In particular, i.e., for V not in S, Pi V prime is the local functorial lift of little Pi V. So pi prime is a global functorial lift. Little pi. And that's the theorem. Okay. That's the official end of the course, but on the one hand, that's the official end. On the other hand, I will be back up here at 10:30 Monday morning, and I will, at that point, try to talk about, okay, now we know functoriality from the classical groups to GLN. We know a lot about GLN. What, if anything, can we say about the classical groups that we didn't already know? So I'm going to try to address that issue on Monday morning. So if you need another fix, you can come back Monday morning for the work. We do have the workshop all next week, right? You are aware of this. So, but otherwise, that's it. I'm done. My 15 minutes, I may or may not take them next Monday. I don't know. We'll see. I make no promises. Otherwise, thank you for coming.